the Gemara is trying to figure out if Shnaim Ochsim Vitalis Yachloku, just reviewing what we did yesterday, because Jeff and Alan weren't here yesterday, so
I get to always use a little
bit. Great. So can this Mishnah of Shnaim Ochsim Vitalis Yachloku, can that work out according to the sugya, the Mishnah later on of Yehemunach Hatshiyom Aliyo? And the Gemara says, Lema Mastisin Delok Reb Yossi, Deik Reb Yossi HaOmar, Imkein Mahiv Sidrama Yala Kol Yehemunach Hatshiyom Aliyo. So what's the case? We have Reuven and Shimon. Both of them were mafkid in the hands of Levi, we'll call him. One of them was mafkid 2 mana. The other only 1 mana. Unfortunately, Levi doesn't remember, and each one, both Reuven and Shimon, is claiming that he was the one that deposited 2 mana. The Chachamim say, look, there's no machlokas, there's no suffix about 1 mana and 1 mana that we can certainly award to Reuven and Shimon. And the 3rd mana should be left in the hands of, let's say, Beis Din until Eliyahu HaNavi will come. Rabbi Yossi went a step further. And Rabbi Yossi says, let's take the entire sum of money, all 3 manas, and leave it in the hands of Beis Din until Eliyahu comes. And the Gemara thinks now that the principle of Rabbi Yossi is based on, and even to some extent the Chachamim agree to this, that we can't have, Beis Din cannot be a part, cannot, you know, lend their services to a Rami, to give money to a Rami. So we know that one of the two, either Reuven and Shimon, is lying about the 3rd mana. We'll see that Rabbi Yossi went a step further. He took this even a step further. He wanted to create a situation in which the Rami would come forward and confess his crime. But before we get to that, let's just talk about the Mana Shlishi. So the Mana Shlishi, if we were to apply the principle of Yachloku, and Reuven would get half of that Mana, Shimon would get half of the Mana, one of the two is lying, one of the two is a thief, and Beis Din can't, lend their services and actively participate in giving a thief money. So the best thing to do in this case, all things are equal, is Yehemunah. At this point, the Gemara thinks that same principle should apply to Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis. Because if you recall, the Chachamim were afraid that somebody might grab onto someone else's talis. That was the previous sugi that we did, that Rabbi Yochanan said that Shvua Zu, the Shvua of admission of Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, is Takonis Chachamim, because Holech Echa Vitokev Taliso Shachaviro V'Omer Shalihu. A person grabs onto someone else's object, someone's talis in this case, and he says, it's mine. There's got to be some deterrent. So the Gemara thinks, if you're worried about someone actually stealing someone else's talis, then why not say in this case of Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, Yehemunach Hatshiyom Aliyo? How can you say Yachloku and get involved in giving half a talis to a Rami? In other words, if one person grabbed onto the talis, let's say Shimon grabbed onto Reuven's talis and he's claiming it's mine, now if you say Yachloku, because you don't know who's lying over here, then the Rami is going to gain money that's not legally his. And therefore we should apply the principle of Yehemunach. That's the Gemara's cash.
Because you got nothing to lose, the Rami.
Again, we're going now according to the Chachamim. The Chachamim say that on Mana Shlishi, right, what we're going to do is, again, as far as the Rami is concerned, his Ramos is only on the Mana Shlishi. And he doesn't lose. Right? He doesn't lose anything by Yehemunah.
When he came along, he took everything.
Correct.
Can I ask you a second question?
Yeah, please.
This Tosfos talks about Shneim Kehu Shneim Muchzokim.
Right, at the beginning of the Masechta.
Anybody challenges that view? That you
would ignore?
It seems like something.
I don't know. I would have to do a little bit more research on that, John. So if you could remind me, I don't know that anyone argues with that Tosus. So the Gemara says the following. Hai mai. So let's see if we could all at least look into the Gemara. This is the Gemara that we did yesterday. I just want to do it today again before we officially start the Shia.
Where is it?
So we're going to look on Daf Gimel Amid Aleph. And we're looking for the words Hai mai. Let's just see how many lines down from the top it is. Second.
Looks like
15. Second. What did you say?
I didn't know something.
Give me one more minute to find the Gemara. I don't want to start the Gemara without you seeing it. Hi, my E Amrit Bishlema Rabbanu. How would you indicate where that is on the daf?
13 lines
from the top? Okay, good. So the Gemara says the following. 13 lines down from the top.
2 lines above Tosfos,
Gabi Chenvoni. Okay, that's even easier. Fine. The Gemara says, Bishlema Rabbanon, I could square off our Mishnah of Shaibos of the Talis with the Rabbanon Shita Manashlishi. Why? Because Hasam, there in the case of Manashlishi, Devadai Hai Manadechad Minayuhu. We don't have any choice but to assume with all certainty that there is a Ramai here. That Manashlishi does not belong to both Reuven and Shimon. There's no way you can split it and say, well, half the Manashlishi belongs to Reuven and half to Shimon. Therefore, Amri Rabbanon, Ye Munach Ad Sheyavo Eliyom. We cannot split the Manashlishi. So it's a moment amuto b'sofek, but it's vade dechad minayim. Moment amuto b'sofek, we don't know who it belongs to, but we know one thing, it belongs to one of them and not to both of them. That pushes in favor, in the rules of psak, in sofek moment, to yehimunach ad sheyavo eliyom. Hacha, but here in the case of Talis, Sam, we're just doing a chazara on what we did yesterday. Were you here yesterday?
No.
Oh, no, you weren't here yesterday either. So this chazara could be helpful for you as well. The ikal amemid de travayu. In the case of Talis, it's feasible that the Talis belongs to both of them. But we'll say, how would it be possible that the Talis belongs to both of them if they both found it at the same time? And they both lifted it up at the same time. Shneim higbius atalis biyachad, ka'achas. Again, I'm not saying that that's a probable situation. I don't know statistically if it's 60%, 80%, or maybe it's only 10%. I don't know. But at least, ikol lemeimar, the Gemara says, there's a possibility. So now we get to the rules of psak, according to the Chacham. This is before we see Rabbi Yosef. If you have moment b'mutal b'safek, v'vadai l'chad minayu, it definitely belongs to one of the two, and there's no way you can reconcile and say half belongs to him and half belongs to him. What's going to be the psak? Yeimunach ad sheyavo eliyom. Bezdin cannot get involved in splitting some mamon, knowing full well that it belongs to one of them, the other one is a rabbi, and he is getting from Bezdin a gift of gneva. You know, we don't give out, Bezdin is not in charge, that's not in their jurisdiction to give out stolen property. But in the case of Shnai Mosa Vitalis, where at least there's a possibility, Ikol and Meimar, the Travayuhu, that they both picked up the Talis simultaneously, then we can apply the principle of Yachloku. And basically, if I were to summarize this Gemara, I would say the following. Maman Abuto Basafek Yachloku. The rule of Psak is Yachloku. Why? Because that's the best thing to do in a case of Safek. But there's another rule. And sometimes the other rule contradicts the first rule. And the other rule is that we cannot actively award money to a rabbi. We can't give a ganav a present. gratis. And that's going to be the exception to the rule of Yachloku, which applies in the case of Mana Shlishi. But there's no question in the Gemara's mind that we can reconcile the Chachamim of Mana Shlishi, where they say Yehei Munach, and our Mishnah of Yachloku. Ella Iyamit Rav Yossi, well, let me just get, but in the case of Rav Yossi, Rav Yossi has another Shita. Rav Yossi's Shita is that it's not enough to say a munach because we're inhibited about giving and awarding money that doesn't rightfully belong to him to the ganav. That's not, because again, if Rabbi Yossi was only going that far with Yei Munach, then that Yei Munach would have no application to the first two manas, because in the case of the first two manas, we're not awarding them to a ganav. Adarabba, we know for sure that one mana belongs to Reuven and one belongs to Shimon. So what is Rabbi Yossi's principle of Yei Munach? I'm sorry, of Yei Munach. Oh, so it means, according to Rabbi Yossi, that even when there could be an element of truth in Yachloku, meaning as far as the first two manas is concerned, there's still a principle of Yei Munach. So the Gemara now presents a kalachomer. Hashta, mahasam, in the case of Mana Shlishi, devada ika mana lamar, for ika mana lamar, there would be no cheating, and there would be no benefit on the part of the thief if Beis Din were to award one mana to Reuven and the other mana to Shimon. And nevertheless, even as far as the first mana to Reuven and the first mana to Shimon, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Yei Munach, we look at this money as a totality, and we apply the principle Yei Munach Ad Sheyavo Elio, which means that according to Rabbi Yossi, whenever there's some even quasi-ramos within this concept, this, Yosef, you don't have to listen here because you heard this yesterday, but even if there's some element of ramos in the entire Din Torah, then we have to throw it all out. Meaning, what the Gemara is now postulating is that Rabbi Yossi's Yei Munach is fundamentally different than the Chachamim's Yei Munach. The Chachamim's Yei Munach, please make yourself comfortable here, move around whenever you have to. The Chachamim's Yei Munach is basically a rule that we cannot give money to a Ghana. And that doesn't apply in the case of Shnai Mosim Batals because of the possibility that what?
They both
own half the talus. So we're not giving a thief that which is not coming to him. In the case of Mana Shlishi, if we would apply Yachloku, we'd be giving a thief. So there's no problem here according to the Chacham. But Rabbi Yossi has a different Yei Munach. Rabbi Yossi's Yei Munach goes way beyond. He's telling us that if there's some sort of an illegitimate element here of thievery within the whole case, because although in the Mana Rishon and Mana Sheni there's no cheat, right? If we give one mana, we still are going to apply Yei Munach. Why? Because we have to avoid any situation in which Beis Din might be offering a psak that has within it on the whole Maman. Again, he's looking, Rabbi Yossi's looking at the whole Maman, which is 300 zuz, right? And as one entity, and now you're going to tell me Yachloku? We can't allow Yachloku. We can't even allow Yei Munach. We have to paskin Yei Munach. Why? Because Rabbi Yossi advocates in favor of Yei Munach. Why? Because Rabbi Yossi says unless you can actually clarify the suffix, then you're always running a risk of possibly awarding money to someone who legally has no rights to that money. Beis Din can't afford that risk. Until they can come to a conclusion, when they weigh the tainus against the tvius and the tainus of Reuven and Shimon, they can finally come to the conclusion based on evidence where the truth lies. If they can't do so, then Yehemunach. Then they should just simply remove themselves from the case, so to speak, and freeze it until Eliyahu HaNavi, because Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof means we have to go all the way. We have to, there are no half-baked measures. You can't say, well, we'll take part of his taina, and we'll take part of his taina, and we'll leave out this part of the taina, that part of the taina. No, no, no. Rabbi Yossi is the extremist on Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof. Until we can finally reach an absolute conclusion that the way we're posketing is definitely MS, and we've clarified who's the chakrit and who's the and who's the rightful owner, until that point we can't get involved. Let's wait for Eliyahu HaNavi. Is Mebele, the Gemara says, there's no way that you can reconcile Rabbi Yossi without Mishnah, because in that Mishnah we can never be definite that each one owns half the talis. So you haven't achieved really your responsibility of Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof. You don't have enough evidence to determine that Reuven owns half the talis and Shimon owns half the talis. Then certainly the way to go, according to Rabbi Yossi, is Yehemunah. Because if at the end of the day Beis Din is still in the dark and they're left with a suffix as far as the Tainus and Tfiyas, you know, Lahatzdik is a Tzadik, Ularshi is a Rosh, they don't know who's the Tzadik and who's the Rosha. If they have doubts about it, then we're not going to tolerate any sort of psak in that case of suffix other than Yehemunah Ad Sheyovelio.
It seems to me that Yossi, to say Tzedek Tirdof is what he wants to do, is because he doesn't want to award the Rosh Chakran any part of it. But it's not any more Tzedek if you deprive somebody else of their rightful property.
Excellent question. In other words, so Rabbi Yossi is kind of in a bind over here, because by saying Yehemunach on the first two manas, he's violating the principle of Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof.
But I think it could be that Yossi is not going that direction. Yossi is taking his clue from where Rabban Yisrael Shmua. The reason the Institute of Shmua is not just that the Shmua itself makes it real, makes it true that it's so. The true is the Shmua is used as a scare tactic to make the chakra rather than take the Shmua shah.
So Alan, let's get to the next piece of Gemara about the scare tactic. That the Gemara is now going to present Rabbi Yossi in a different light in terms of a scare tactic. But at this point, again, just to emphasize the Shaka Vitaria, the Gemara thinks that Yehemunach of Rabbi Yossi is the absolute rule of Psak in the case of Mavan Amutu B'Safek. Don't get involved, because once you get involved, unless you have absolute clarity, you are going to risk affording or awarding illegitimate money to the thief. Okay. Now the Gemara says the following. Now what I'd like you to this is what we spent some time on yesterday, is to please note that the Gemara is going to raise two possible answers to this question, two possible approaches to Rabbi Yossi, and they'll be separated by the Enam. So the Gemara says the following: Afilu Tema Rabbi Yossi. Afilu Tema Rabbi Yossi. Do you have a Gemara?
No, but I can hear
you. You want to look it up? We're on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and until now we reviewed what we did yesterday, and now we're starting Afilu Tema. Okay, then see if you can find the Afilu Tema. It's about. It's pretty much parallel to Tosas Dibur Maskil below. If you have. No. If you see a Tosas called Velo, do you have the Tosas on the page? Or I don't know. I can't deal with all the different. Yeah.
I don't want to interrupt.
Afilu Tema Rabbi Yossi. Afilu Tema Rabbi Yossi. Hasam vadai ikar ramai. Hacham miyemar di ikar ramai. Emer di travayu bahari adodi agbuhua. The Gemara now completely retracts its understanding of Rabbi Yossi. Menakotza la kotza. The Gemara now holds that even Rabbi Yossi holds that Mamen Abutu b'Safek Cholkin. We should divide it. That's the best way of achieving Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof. We'll call it damage control. However, that principle of Yachloku hits up against a dead end when we know for sure that there's a Ramai. Now, the Gemara doesn't tell us, but I think we can, in a sense, derive it from, shall we say, between the lines of this Gemara. Why did Rabbi Yossi go a step further than the Chachamim? And because of Avada Ika Ramai, why did Rabbi Yossi insist that we say Yeimunach, bless you, even on the money that's Vadai, meaning the first money that we award to Reuven, and the second money that we should reward to Shimon, because on that there's no debate, there's no question, there's no issue. But again, the answer is that at this point there's a Vadai Ramai over here. When there's a Vadai Ramai, you know, the whole system turns off. Basically, in the absence of a Vadai Ramai, when we have the possibility of Yachloku, because it could be that the Chaluki Cholios Emes, then Rabbi Yossi would also be on board and he would advocate Yachloku. Rabbi Yossi's problem is, and here he gets very allergic to a Vadai Ramai situation, he says, in a Vadai Ramai situation, I cannot apply Yachloku. And I'm going to go as far as to say that Bezdin should not be involved at all in this case. Even as far as that Mamon, because it's an all or nothing situation. In other words, Bezdin has to paskin on the Mamon as a whole. But now watch the Inami. The Inami gives us a whole nother twist on Rabbi Yossi. Awesome. In the case of Manashlishi, Kanisle Rabbi Yossi Laramai. Now this is very interesting. Rabbi Yossi says we're going to penalize the Ramai, we're going to take away his mana out of his pocket. Now wait a second, who is the Ramai? Is it Reuven or Shimon?
Whichever one it is going to get a knas, because they're both getting the knas.
But that's very strange, to impose a knas on the good guy. You know, I don't mind imposing a knas on the bad guy, you know, but why impose a knas on the good guy? You know, that's a strange kind of halach. So the Gemara answers that this is a means to an end. This is a ploy, ki hechi delode, to motivate the Ramai. Let's hope it works, because if it doesn't work, you've stolen a mana from someone who honestly owns a mana. Okay, so the Ramai, maybe we could understand the knas, but what about the honest person? He's losing a mana. So basically, Rabbi Yossi is saying, don't worry about it. I understand the psychology of a Ramai, and I can guarantee you that this Ramai is not going to allow this to go on. He's going to come forward and say, let me cut my losses. See, I'm not going to get the extra money that I wanted to get through thievery, through falsehood. At least, let me get back my own money. Ha-ha. But that logic doesn't apply in the case of Shnayim Oaks and Vitalis. My Pseda Islay Delodi. What this means to an end, you know, to try to motivate the Ramai to admit, is not going to work in the case of Shnayim Oaks and Vitalis. Again, we have two cases of Shnayim Oaks and Vitalis, but right now the Gemara is focused on one of those two cases, which is called what? Metziah. Metziah means that they both found a lost object. So if there's a lost object, then the Ramai is not going to be motivated to come forward. It's a little embarrassing to admit that he falsified his claim, and he's not motivated to do so in the case of a Metziah, because he didn't pay for it. He's not losing anything out of pocket. That's not really called a knas. So now, according to the second answer and the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi, it really comes out the following, that Rabbi Yossi is not, he's not allergic to Yachloku. He can advocate in favor of Yachloku, but he thinks there's a better rule of Psak that has one up it on Yachloku, and that'll get us closer to Tzedek Tzedek Tiritov. And that if we use the Yehemunach as a ploy, as a means to get the Ramai to confess, and then we'll get to the real truth, we'll get to the bottom of it. So that in the case of Yachloku, we have no option of enticing or alluring the rabbi to make a hodah, and therefore we're gonna paskin yachloku. So Rabbi Yossi can also accept yachloku, but in a situation where we have a window of opportunity, and through the method of Yevunach, we can get the rabbi to admit the truth, and then we can finally come down to the bottom of this whole story. We can solve the whole mystery. Then and only then, Rabbi Yossi says we're going to apply the principle of Yehemunah. So let's just understand again the two approaches to Rabbi Yossi. The first approach in the Gemara to Rabbi Yossi is that Rabbi Yossi is allergic to what's called a Vadei Ramai. That's the problem. When he has a Vadei Ramai situation, he doesn't want to advocate in favor of Yachloku, because we take the Mona Shlishi, and not only that, Rabbi Yossi extended the Vadei Ramai to inhibit Beis Din from getting involved at all. If there's a Vadei Ramai here, and if Beis Din has to paskin on the Mammon, the entire Mammon that's being judged, then if any part of that Mammon is going to violate the principle of a Vadei Ramai, then Beis Din should not get involved. The second approach in Rabbi Yossi is radically different. The second approach is saying that not that Rabbi Yossi is allergic to a Vadei Ramai, but rather Rabbi Yossi thinks in the case of a Vadei Ramai, there is an opening, a window of an opportunity to apply Yehimunach, which will be a means and a method to get the Vadei Ramai to admit, and then we'll hit the home run, so to speak. We'll have a clarification of the MS, and that's going to be tzedek tirdof.
That's only the Ramai.
Again, we're talking about Mona Shlishi. Mona Shlishi is a Vadei Ramai. Yeah, okay. Why is there a Mona Shlishi? Let's go over. In Mona Shlishi, what happens is that somebody sees a situation where he can lie, because again, the Nifka doesn't know who gave him the Mona Shlishi. So the liar now says, well, I gave you the Mona Shlishi. I don't know who it is. It's either Reuven or Shimon, but one of the two is a Vadei Ramai. According to the first Pshat Rabbi Yossi, in the case of Vadei Ramai, Beis Din has to just non-involvement. You know, well, let's wait for Elio and Novi. That's the only way we could get to Tzedek Tirdo. On the other hand, in a case where there's no Vadei Ramai, then Rabbi Yossi advocates in favor of Yachloku. The second Pshat is no. Rabbi Yossi is saying something totally different. Rabbi Yossi is saying tzedek tirdo. Now what are our best options to achieve tzedek tirdo? For Rabbi Yossi comes up with this new ploy, this new angle to get the Ramai to admit and confess his the fact that he lied, and we can do so by what? By knas. The knas, again, it's. He's playing with fire, Rabbi Yossi. Do you see this? Because if the rabbi doesn't eat the bait, he doesn't bite the bait, then the rightful owner of one mana is going to lose his money. His money is now in escrow in the hands of Beis Din, waiting for Elio and Novi. You know, I hope Elio will be here tomorrow. But if he afal pi she's my man. But if he takes his time, in the meantime, somebody who has legal rights to a mana has been removed from his rights. That's not true according to the Chachamim. It's only true according to Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi is willing to hedge his bets. He says, I have a PhD in psychology, and I can absolutely be certain that the Rami is going to come forward. The Rami doesn't want to take a loss of a hundred zoos. Just one second. So the Gemara says, that's wonderful, that second shot in Metziah. But the Mekach Umemkar, Ma'ika Lememar, in the case of Mekach Umemkar, Rabbi Yossi's Yehimunach as a ploy to entice the Ramai to confess is very, very appropriate. Why? Because if you recall, the case of Mekach Umemkar is where both Reuven and Shimon gave the money over to the Mocher. So Mocher is holding on to both their money. Now, what would Rabbi Yossi say in this case, based on the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi? Why don't we say Yehimunach on everything? In other words, the monies that were given over to the Mocher will remain in the hands of the Mocher, or Alternatively, as we quoted yesterday, the Mordechai means the mocher will transfer that money over to the hands of Beis Din, and the money will remain in escrow in Beis Din. And the talis, which was sold to one of the two of them, we don't know to which one, that'll also remain in the hands of Beis Din. So imagine the rabbi's situation here. He knows full well that the object, the talis, was sold to Loma Zogin, to Reuven. But Shimon says, you know, he'll get back his money, and he'll go buy a talis down the block, and all the horos heter that we spoke about. So he decides that he's going to fabricate the truth. He's going to tell him, he's going to come into Beis Din claiming that he bought this talis. Ah, what are you ending up with now? You're ending up with nothing. Not only will you not be awarded the talis, because that's a munach, but even on the monies you paid, it will be a munach. That's a knas. So the Gemara says, "Elamachvarto kiddushanina meikar." In other words, the bottom line is that the Gemara rejects the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi, because if the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi were correct, then Rabbi Yossi would not be able to accept Shnai Mosim Vitalis Yachlok in the case of what? Of Mekach Umemkar. And if the premise is that we want to reconcile Rabbi Yossi with our Mishnah, and our Mishnah has two cases, even a case of Mekach Umemkar, then the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi could not be correct. So I just want to point out the word Ella here. Tosis makes a big deal about the word Ella. Okay, that's the Tosti Maskel Ella, you guessed it. Because Tosti says that Ella means that this is the final conclusion of the Gemara. Why is this critical? In Tosti's frame of reference, it has to be that the Gemara rejects the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi. It has to be. Otherwise, we'll never be able to figure out the next two lines of the Gemara. Which means that Rabbi Yossi, going back to the first interpretation, is allergic to a Vadei Ramai situation. He would love to apply the principle of Yachloku, and he will, as long as there's no Vadei Ramai. Once there's Vadei Ramai, Beis Din has to look at this Taina Tfias as a whole, again, the three manas as one indivisible entity, as we discussed, and Beis Din has to say non-involvement. Let Elio decide. How does Tosis know that the word Ella means that the Gemara rejects the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi outright? Take a look at the next line in the Gemara. The Gemara says the following: Bein l'Rabbanan u'bein l'Rabbi Yossi hasam, meaning whether you take the Rabbanan's approach to Yehi Munach, which means we only apply Yehi Munach to what? To the Mana Shlishi, or you take Rabbi Yossi, who applies Yehi Munach to both.
All of it.
Hasam, what do we do with the Mishnah of Chenvani Alpin Kasa? So just again, for those who were here yesterday, and then I'll review it for those who weren't here yesterday, in Chenvani Alpin Kasa, the Chenvani takes a Shuas Nishba Venotel, and the Paul takes the Paul and take a Shvuas Nishba Venotel. In effect, the Balabais is going to pay twice. And now the Gemara has a problem. Why? Because we should apply the principle of Yehi Munach. Okay, so again, let's go over the case. For those who maybe don't remember the case or weren't here when we discussed the case, the Balabais has hired a Chenvani. He's like the middleman, the money changer, so to speak. And he will pay the Paulin when they finish the work. The Chenvani claims that he paid the Paulin. The Paulin claimed that they never got paid. So the Chenvani says, I laid out money, I have to be reimbursed. That was the nature of the agreement. The Paulin say, well, we did the work, we were hired, and the nature of the agreement is they have to pay.
The Chenvani is supposed to pay them, didn't pay them.
I don't know. We don't know. We don't know who's lying. It could be the Polim are lying. They want to get paid twice. It could be the Chenvani is lying and he never paid. We don't know who's lying. So what we're going to do is, and this is Takanas Chachamim, we're going to allow both the Chenvani and the Polim to collect from the Mocher, from the Balabais. He's going to have to pay twice. But conditional on what? On a Shvur. So each one will take a Shvur. So the Gemara now assumes that according to the Mishnah on Lamed Zayin of Yehi Munach, the psak here in the case of Chenvani al Pinkasa should be Yehi Munach. Now let's work this out. What does that mean, Yei Munach? The Gemara says, Bein l'Rabbanon, u'bein l'Rab Yossi. We should have to paskin Yei Munach. Let's go min akal el achamer, from the easy case to the more challenging case. The easier case would be the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon Shita in what? In Yei Munach, was that if there's a Vare Ramai, then we are going to apply the principle of Yei Munach. In the case of Chenvani al Pinkasa, there's a Vare Ramai. Why? Because either the Chenvani pay the Paulim, and then the Paulim are lying, or the Chenvani never pay the Paulim, and the Chenvani is lying. Someone is an outright thief. And therefore, we should apply the principle of Yei Munach. Now let's go with Rabbi Yossi. So let's take the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi. The second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi is what? Is that it's a knas, right? That we're going to use, we're going to employ the method of Yei Munach in order to motivate the Ramai to confess his crime. Oh, so where's the hefsed here? So let's just think. If we would apply a munach, we're dealing with a sum of money. Let's call it 100. The Chenvani claims that Magilo 100 because he shelled out 100 to pay for the poem. The poem claimed we never got paid, and that 100 is out. So we have that 100. Let's apply the principle of a munach to that 100. That's the Gemara's kasha. Will that motivate the Ramai to come forward and confess his crime? I have nothing against the Chenvani, don't misunderstand me, but just theoretically, let's say the Chenvani was the one who lied, correct? Did the Chenvani shell out? No. So by taking this mana and holding it in escrow, is he going to lose anything?
No.
Nothing. Let's say the flip side. Let's say the Poel was already paid. So you take the 100 and you put it in escrow. Why is that going to motivate the Poel to admit his truth? He's not losing anything. The whole concept of Knas is inapplicable. Says Tosfos, you can only understand this line in the Gemara if you emphasize Ella. Ella means that the Gemara rejects the second interpretation of Rabbi Yossi. We go back to the first interpretation of Rabbi Yossi. And that is that Yei Munach applies according to Rabbi Yossi whenever he smells a rat, whenever he smells a Vare Ramai. If there's a Vare Ramai, then Bezdin's the rule that governs Bezdin is non-involved. Wait till Eliyahu HaNavi comes. So the Gemara answers the following. You misunderstood the whole Mishnah of Chenvani al Pinkaso. Chenvani al Pinkaso, in which we're going to allow both the Chenvani and the Poel to collect with a Shvua, is not based on the Kloli HaPsak for Mamon HaMutal B'Sofek. There's an entirely different mechanics, a different set of rules that apply here. Hasam Hainu Taima. Why is it that the Chenvani has rights to collect from the Baal HaBayis once he takes the Shvua? The Amar Le Chenvani LeBaal HaBayis Anosh Lichusa Didach Kavdina. You want to say that I have some sort of a claim against the Poalim because the Chenvani says I paid the Poalim, the Poalim saying they never got paid. So you, the Baal HaBayis, want to say, well, you know what? You work this out with the Poalim. Go to the Poalim and sue them because you're claiming that they basically are holding on to your money, and now you want to get reimbursed from me. So the Chenvani says, what connection do I have with the Poalim? You appointed me as your shliach, and I fulfilled my shlichus, and you have no recourse to say, well, I, the Chenvani, I have to deal with the Poalim, my Isle Gabi Socher, I have nothing to do with them. By contractual agreement, you committed yourself to reimburse me. The Afal Gabda Kamishtabali, and even if you'll tell me, well, let the Poalim, again, we're talking out of the mouth of the Baal HaBayis, of the one who hired the Chenvani, and he's saying, you know what? We're going to believe the Paul because the Paul is taking a Shvuah. So the Chenvani says, "Lo mehemni li b'shvuah." I never believed in Moshua. Ahemante. You're the one who said that the Poel is contractually empowered to collect his money, and if need be, you have some reason to doubt that he deserves being paid the wages, then you trusted him with a shvua. The loka amit li b'sahadi yohavle. You never made a stipulation in the contract, says the Chanvani to the Baal Bais, that I could only pay the Poelim in front of two witnesses, and I wouldn't be believed to say that I paid the Poelim. It's your error, it's your negligence that you didn't make a stipulation that my word is not good, it's not reliable, unless I can support it with two witnesses. Now we get to the Sochir. The Sochir is the Poel. Nami, he also says, Omer Lebaal Habayis, Ano Avidna, Avdi Avidta Gaba. I did my work. You have a contractual agreement that you have to pay me. Now you're going to tell me, well, the Chanvani says that he paid you. Well, what shaykhus do I have with the Chanvani? My relationship and yours, chaykhus, is directly to me. My isli gabot the Chanvani. V'yafo gab the mishtabli, and even if the Chanvani would take an oath that he paid me up, lo mehemnisli, I never trusted him. Hilkach Chavayu Mishtabi Vishakli Mibal Bais. This is a unique case in which each of the two claimants has a claim not against each other, but rather against the Baal Bais. And within the context of their claim against the Baal Bais, each one has a winning claim. So in this case, just one second, I just want to make sure I get the punchline here. In this case, everybody would agree that Yei Munach is not applicable. Why? Because Yei Munach is only in a case where you have two Bali Dinim and we pit one against the other. There's going to be a head-on dispute between Reuven and Shimon. We don't know if Reuven's telling the truth, Shimon's telling the truth, is a Vadei Ramai. We're going to apply the principle of Yei Munach. But in this case, it's not that Reuven is tiny against Shimon, or vice versa. But rather, Reuven has a claim independent of Shimon against the Baal Habayis. Contractually, you relied on my word that I'm going to come forward and claim I paid up, and you're going to pay me up. That was the contractual eschivus. So too, the Poel says, there was a contractual. You never stipulated that I could only claim wages if I bring Adam that I wasn't paid. You know, I have to lock up two Adam in my room, and they have to be here from now until doomsday to testify that I never received the wages.
But in an absolute sense, you're requiring somebody to lie. Yeshua, one of them is a liar. And
are you referring to Benanas now?
I'm referring to,
because Benanas says we cannot impose two shvuas if we know one is a false shvua.
I thought that's a klal in general.
That's only Benanas.
Only
Benanas, because the Chachamim say each one takes a shvua, and Benanas says no, we can't allow both.
Each
of them
one
to take
takes a shvua on that, but the shvua is a correct shvua.
Well, no, it can't be that both shvuas are correct. Oh, wait a second, you're going back to Talos. But let's just finish up with the Machlokas Benanas and the Chachamim is in the case of Chenvani.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, Chenvani al Pinkaso, the Chachamim say let them both take a shvur because each one has a winning claim against his friend, against the Baal Bais. But the Chachamim are going to say, well, wait a minute, we can't allow this to go on, you know, laissez-faire, you know, unfettered or without some sort of restriction, so we're going to impose a chiyuv shvur. And that's going to be a shvuas nishba benotel. That's an enactment of the Rabbanu. Rabbi Yossi says we can't enact two shvuas in one case where we know one of the shvuas is definitely a false shvua. But in the case of Talis, there even Benanas, the Gemara says, could square with that Mishnah because each one is taking a shvua only on half the Talis, and it's quite possible that both shvuas are shvuas.
The Baal Habayis is the one that's losing in this case here, according to Benanas. Because they're going to take two
others
from him.
Correct. But a shvua we can't impose. So that's an impossibility.
What is exactly? Let's say we go with Yei Munach. What is exactly the?
There's nothing to be Munach.
No, I mean,
on the Habamim, when the Gemara thinks we should say Yei Munach. Right?
No, when you say Yei Munach, if you say Yei Munach, in whatever case it happens to be, what is the status of the claimants vis-a-vis the money at that point after the Beis Din said Yehuda.
After that, we wait till Elio.
What I mean to say is, let's say after a period of time goes by, and both of them realize the other guy is not going to fess up, and they come together and they say, "Let's make a pshara. I'm willing to say and to accept half, and you're willing to accept half, and we'll at least we'll get something back." Now, do they have the right words?
I don't think so.
As far as I know,
it's an excellent question. But as far as I know, no, they can't work that out. Why? Because Beis Din is holding on to the moment. Once Beis Din is holding on to the moment, then it's an absolute obligation on Beis Din. Now, it could be what you might have a point of mechila here. Let's say, if you steal something, I don't mean you, Al, but if somebody steals something from me, it's possible that I could be mochel.
Yeah, but you don't have the right to be mochel. Now, this is what I'm trying to determine is once Yehudah is a real psak, and once it's a real psak, is money no longer actually, it's sort of a type of a hefker, but there's nobody that can get it.
Right, unless it's mechila. Again, the psak of Yemunach is based on the fact that we have two people claiming that money. If one person pulls out of his claim or pulls out of half the claim, then it could be that we could say yachlok.
If he has the right to be mechila.
If he has the right to be mechila. Okay, Rav Osai, this is all yesterday. Now we start today. Okay, so we'll learn for another 15 minutes, and then we want to learn some chul and have some exciting things to say. Okay. This is the famous sugya of Tani Reb Chiya. It's a well-known sugya in Shas. And it's the sugya of Kal V'Chomer. You really have to be a bucky in the rules of Kal V'Chomer in order to appreciate this sugya. But we'll try to take a stab at it. Before we start the sugya, I want to make a technical comment here, if you're interested. Very often the Gemara says Amar Rab Chiya. In our case, the Gemara doesn't say Amar Rab Chiya, but rather it says Tani Rab Chiya. What that means is that Rab Chiya is an Amora. Again, I'm not telling you that everybody's going to agree with this, but according to one school of thought, Rab Chiya has the status of an Amora. And if it says Amar Rab Chiya, it's only considered a statement of an Amora. But if he says Tani Rab Chiya, what Rab Chiya is doing is he's quoting a Braisa. And then it becomes jacked up, you know, to the level of a Tana.
But it often says Rab Chiya Tani Rubu Poli.
Okay, I'm just saying that according to one school of thought, Rab Chiya is an Amora, he's not a Tana. But if it says Tani Rab Chiya, then it has the status of a Tana. And this is noged to how you paskin halacha. So for example, the Gemara is going to work very hard to protect the interest here of Rab Chiya because it says Tani Rab Chiya. Again, if you're interested in researching this, I can give you Mar Makomos here. The Masifta has a whole discussion here. He says that it would seem that Rab Chiya himself certainly advocates in favor of this Braisa because the Braisa, Rab Chiya, after he quotes the Braisa, he's going to try to prove that the Braisa is correct based on our Mishnah. So you see that this is not just. Very often, you know, the Gemara says that a certain Amora brought a tradition of a Braisa. Doesn't mean that the Amora necessarily is committed to accept the position of the Braisa. In this case, it seems that Rab Chiya is committed to accept the Braisa because he's going to work overtime to try to prove the halacha of the Braisa. Now, we're a little bit prejudiced against this sugya. I'll tell you why. Because we already know Rabbi Yochanan. You remember that we learned Rabbi Yochanan on the top of this Amud that the Shvuah in our Mishnah is the Takanas Chachamim. Forget about that. You remember the old game Etch-a-Sketch. You know, just wipe it off your memory right now because otherwise it's going to just confuse you. At this point, in the sugya of Tani Dvei Rabbi Chiya, we don't know Rabbi Yochanan. That's classified information. We're going to assume that the Shvuah in our Mishnah is a Shvuah Doraisa. Now, there are only three Shvuahs Doraisa, correct? There's Eid Echad, there is Motiv Mitzvah, and the Shvuah HaShomer. We're not talking about a Shomer here. We're not talking about an Eid Echad, L'chora. But what we're talking about is Motiv Mitzvah. Now, where's Motiv Mitzvah? Each one is claiming the entire Talis is mine.
Later on in the Mishnah, there's going to be a case where he admits on half the Talis, but that's not what we're discussing here. We're discussing the ratio of the Mishnah. So if we assume that Tani Debei Reb Chiya is going to be supported by our Mishnah as a Shvua Doraisa, then we're going to have to rack our brains and see where is the mode of a Mikzas in our Mishnah. Tani Reb Chiya, Mana Li Biyadcha. So if I demand a mana and you admit that you owe me 50, that's called a Shvuas Modu B'Miktsas. Is there a possible Shvuas Modu B'Miktsas when you deny the entire claim? That's the Chiddush of Tani Debei Reb Chiya. Hala Omer Ein Lecha B'Yadei Klum. I deny the whole claim. What happened now? The Tovea subpoenas two witnesses into Beis Din for Eidim Me'idin Oso She'yesh Lo Chamishim Zuz. They testify only on 50 out of the 100. Says Reb Chiya, again the Brice of Reb Chiya, no say lo chamishim zuz. Okay, the Eidim testify, that's al pishnayim Eidim yokum dover. On 50 zuz they have to pay, he has to pay. But then vishava al ashar, he has to take a shvua on the balance of the claim. That part of the claim that he denied, and there was no Eidim to support the balance, meaning the other 50. Why does he have to take a shvua? After all,
he
wasn't mowed to anything. He's a kofra kol. Kofra kol doesn't take a shvua. And here's where the Brisa indicates that we have a kavachomer. Again, a kavachomer could operate on a doraisa level. Shalotehe hodas piv gedola me'ahodas edim mikavachomer. What it means is the following. That if in the case where he was moda on 50, he has to take a shvuah on the balance, how much more so in the case where Edom testify on the 50, even though he denies the whole claim, that he has to take a shvuah on the other 50. I mean, you and I might say, well, if the Edom only testified on 50, maybe it means the whole, the loan itself was only 50. But right now the Gemara is not holding like that. The Gemara is holding that the Edom know for sure that he borrowed 100 and he paid, we know that he paid back 50, we know that he didn't pay back the other 50. In any event, it's a case in which the Edim testify against a Kofra Kol, and they support the claim of the Tovea on half the claim. Well, let's say there weren't any Edim. Instead, the Nitba was mowed on half the claim. If the Torah requires a Shvu on the other half of the claim, when the evidence is based on the Hodas Baldin, how much more so when the Torah impose a Shvua when the establishment on 50 was based on Edim? In other words, Edim are more reliable than Hodas Piv, which is very interesting, why the Gemara assumes so, and the Gemara later on is going to question this premise, but right now, the Gemara is assuming that whatever applies to Hodas Baldin could certainly apply to Edim. So if there's a Hodas Baldin on half, take a shvua on the balance. If there's Hodas Edim on the half, likewise you have to take a shvua on the balance. So again, this part of the sugya we could probably understand.
I can't understand it. It's logically very...
Wait, let me try to explain the logic of it. The logic is the following. There's something called a taina chashuva. There are two types of taina. For example, if I come into Bez and I say that you owe me 100, that's not a taina chashuva. Why? Because you deny the whole claim. There's no support for that claim whatsoever. Therefore, I cannot be mechayev you a shvu. But once I support the claim, the Torah says it looks like, something's fishy over here. It doesn't smell right. Why? Because you denied the whole claim, and yet I have testimony to prove that at least 50 you owe me. That makes my taina on 100 into a taina chashuva. Where is the basis, the source for that in the Torah? That's called the Shvuas Modu B'Miktsas, Ki Uzeh. And what's a Shvuas Modu B'Miktsas? What makes the Tainu into Taina Chashuva? Hodas Baldin. If you admit on half the claim, that means Yesh Dvar Bego. This is not an empty claim. Somebody who comes into Beis Din with a claim and he's not supported in any way, that's not a Taina Chashuva. That can't generate a Shvua. But if there's a Taina Chashuva because my claim was supported, at least B'Miktsas, then that taina now becomes a taina chashuva, and to the extent to which you contradict that taina, you have to take a shvua.
But here there's no Hadar. I mean,
so what makes my
Bacol here?
Right. So what makes my Taina to Taina Chashuva? Maybe I just I met you on the street one day and I decided to demand 100 zuz from you. I'm a nobody, right? Why not? This is fun. You know, I'm going to force you to take a shvuah. You don't want to take a shvuah, so you'll probably pay me the money. It's a great idea. You know, for this thievery, you don't even have to take, you know, thievery 1.1. You know, this is a great idea. Why not be Tovea someone on the street? And I'll have to take a shvuah. So the answer is because there's no basis for my claim. It's a taina she'ena chashuva. What makes it into a taina chashuva, if there's some support, that some evidence in favor of my taina, even if it's only b'miktas, it's not that I met you on the street and I patted you on the back and I said, I'm schlepping you to Bezdin because you owe me 100. I have ample evidence to my taina, but not to the entire taina. So the evidence for miktas taina is enough to jack up my taina to the state of what? Of a taina chashu. Okay, the next part of the sugya is the most challenging part. V'tana tuna. Says Rav Chiya, I'm going to prove that the halachic principle formulated by this brisa is absolutely correct. How? From our Mishnah. Shnayim oksim betalis. Now again, we're the Edom here. There's no Edom in Shnayim oksim betalis. Zeh omer ani mitzasiya. Now, there's no mode of mitzas either, right? Each one claims the whole talis. So where do you have any sort of analogy? I mean, this is really creative on the part of Rav Chiya, between our Mishnah of Shnayim Oksim B'talis and the case of the Braisa of a Kofra Kol, and there are two Edom that testify that he owes half. V'ahacha says the Gemara, Kevah the Tophis, since one of them is Tophis, and then we're going to say that we're going to apply the same logic to the other one. But right now, let's choose Reuven. Reuven is grabbing onto the talis. Let's say he has muchzakus on what? On half the talis. Right? That was the big deal of Tosus Yachloku on Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Is Anan Sahadi? We were wondering where Tosus had the chutzpah of applying the principle of Anan Sahadi. Just because he's holding on to the half of the talis, maybe he grabbed half of the talis. I don't know. He stole it. What makes it into an Anan Sadi? The answer I don't know, but I can tell you where he got it from at least. Anan Sadi, the mighty Tophis, hi Didei, Didei. So let's say Reuben is Tophis half the talis. We have an Anan Sadi, as if to say that the two Aiden testifying that he owns half the talis. Now let's flip it around. Let's go up to Shimon. Mighty Tophis, hi Didei. Shimon likewise, no less than Reuven, has a muchzakus. He's toughest the half the talis, and that muchzakus generates an anan sadi that he owns half the talis. Uketari, and the Mishnah says yishava. What kind of shvuah is this? A shvuah spelled of a mixas. Why? Because even though he's denying the entire claim, but there are two edim that support the tzadcha kenegdo on half the claim. So let's take, for example, we can do it in both directions. Let's take Reuven's perspective. Reuven is claiming the whole talus. We have evidence on half the talus. Okay, so again, it depends how you want to start it. With Reuven or Shimon, it makes no difference. But when Shimon denies Reuven's claim, Reuven can adduce two witnesses, again in inverted commas, two witnesses to support his claim on half the talus. Where are the two witnesses?
He's holding on.
If he's holding on to it, that generates an Anan Sadi. So he's got two witnesses to support half his claim. So when he claims against Shimon that this entire talus is mine, he has two witnesses to support that claim half the talus.
And that knocks out the Kofar HaKol. It's as if the Kofar HaKol doesn't stand anymore.
Well, yeah, okay. But I mean, Lamaisa, you're right. I don't know, conceptually, I wouldn't necessarily formulate it exactly that way, that it knocks off the Kofar HaKol. But what it does is it makes the Taina into a Taina Chashuva. Why? I'm claiming this talus is mine. You're saying, who are you? You're a man off the street. You grab onto my talus and you claim that it's yours? Hey, buddy, I got two A in them to testify that I'm not just a man off the street that grabbed onto your talus. My taina on this talus is a taina chashuva, and I'll prove at least half of my taina. How? Because I'm holding on to half the talus. And the possession itself generates an anan sadi, and therefore there's an anan sadi on half the talus. Okay, Rabbi Ose, this is where I want to stop for today. I'm here on Thursday. If any of you can show up on Thursday, that's Tovah Lo Bracha.
it's officially Bein Hazmanim on Thursday, and we have a very short period of time between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, and it's a really, my heart goes out for all the ladies, you know, including my wife. But somehow she gave me the okay for the morning, just for the morning of Thursday. So I'm here until Mincha on Thursday. So if anyone's here,
and Chol HaMoed, then there's no shir.
No, I'll pick it up after Sukkot. What do you say?
Reverend didn't give permission for Chol HaMoed.
No, not for Chol HaMoed. Chol HaMoed is that's family time. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.